You're listening to Waveform, a show about music, discovery, and the technology that ties it all together in new and powerful ways. This program is brought to you by Wavelake, the easiest way to distribute and stream music using Bitcoin. Listen today at wavelake.com.
Hey, this is Waveform. We're back for another episode. I'm here with Sam. Hi, Sam.
Hi, episode six? Yes, episode six.
We're on episode six.
We've done
pretty
six.
Cool. Yeah.
Not bad. Not bad. Like 12 weeks of this.
Yeah.
All right.
Thanks for all of you who have taken time to listen to us and also comment and send back messages on via Boostergrams or on Twitter. We see them.
We see them, but now we have, you know, Tone Wrecker, who did that cool little intro that just played.
Yeah.
Tone Wrecker took the challenge to make us a little bumper for our listener mail. Are we gonna check it out?
Let's do it.
All right. he made us two, but this is, I think we all like this one the best. It's a little bit longer. Let's play this one.
Boosts. Messages. Give it a boost. Zap. Give it a boost.
Zap. Boost. Zap. Boost.
See if you've got any messages.
You've got boost. Boost.
I've heard of audience participation shows, but this is ridiculous.
Fantastic.
thank you, Tone Wrecker.
Yeah,
that
thank
was
you.
Wonderful.
So that Tone opens up our listener mail segment officially.
Ooh, now. Yes, it does. We're getting so legit.
we're getting up there. Yeah. We have theme music. Bumpers for segments.
I was going to ask you slash embarrass you.
Oh, no.
Is that count-in that you do? That's, I'm assuming, like at the beginning of each show, for people who don't know, Michael has this very distinct count-in. Is that like almost like a hypnosis thing? Does it trigger you into professionalism in broadcasting?
I mean, there might be kind of a Pavlovian effect of that because I've done it so many times. So yes,
it puts you in the spirit.
Yeah,
the proper spirit.
It gets you into the headspace of being on mic. One of the things I remember, it just reminds me. The reason the 3-2-1 breath or the 3-2-1 countdown started was I learned from a coach that when you're reading a piece on air, you don't want to necessarily have like an entire breath in your lungs. Like you don't want your lungs totally full and then to just like deplete all that air really early in the read.
That's what I do.
So you want,
that's exactly what I do.
So
it's 100% what I do.
The idea is, by counting down from 3-2-1, you're depleting some of that air and kind of like decompressing your lungs a little bit. So you go into the first word not like fully loaded, but just relaxed.
Well, that's really cool. I'm glad that you're professional. Do you want to talk about how professional I am? I didn't even hit record on this podcast. Good thing we're both recording backups, because I'm such a horrible producer of this show. So luckily we're both recording on GarageBand or whatever. So
we're good. We're good, right?
We're good. But I just looked down at this while you were talking about how professional you are, and I was like, wow, I'm really not.
Well, at least we caught it.
We caught it.
We've gotten better at this too.
Because
I
mean this thing takes so long to render anyway. I almost prefer the files.
The first couple of these we did, we were kind of like walking on a high wire, and then at the end of it, we're like, I hope that recorded, and then we just crossed
our
sketchy.
Fingers,
hoping.
Yeah. Let's get back to the mail, but for
yes,
the question
right.
for this show
we,
is
we're gonna read
what are,
mail.
We're gonna read mail, but the question for this show is, what programs do you guys, what software websites do you use for this kind of stuff?
Because
I feel like I've tried Squadcast, I've tried Riverside. Is there something better? There's probably some like super cool open source version of all this stuff that we could be utilizing, but we're not.
Right, we use cassette tapes on each side and then we mail them to each other.
Bounce
them down.
That would actually be awesome. I would love to do that. So,
All
right. So mail, what do we got?
Mail. We've got some mail. Let's see. There's a nice note we got from Nate Jonovan via Fountain. He's got some music on Wavelake that's fantastic if you haven't heard it already. He goes under a few different monikers and bands.
Got some cool projects, yeah.
He wrote, "Please keep doing these. I'm not a tech guy, and you guys are filling in the gaps of my knowledge. Also, loving Wavelake the more I get into it." Thanks for that, Nate. Yeah, I hope that this is helpful for people who maybe are unfamiliar with Value for Value, as well as, you know, all the technology that we're using, like the concepts and the technology. If you guys have questions or if something's unclear, yeah, please let us know, because we'll be happy to answer or try to answer as best we can.
Yeah, absolutely. Thank you, Nate.
Yeah. Another message here from Cole McCormick 1. I believe this was also via Fountain. "Love hearing the early licensing talk. Somewhat reminds me of how TikTok and Instagram let you choose to allow your video to be split up and remixed. I like the idea of artists having full control of what their license agreement is with podcasters. Maybe there is a way for Wavelake and hosts to show the artists where their songs are being played and notify if there is a violation of any kind. It would be up to the owner of the music to do anything legal-wise. Represent yourself, ultimately." Shoulder shrug emoji.
Shoulder shrug emoji is one of my favorite emojis, probably.
It's a good one.
What's yours? I like that one. I also like the melty face.
Yeah, you know? I know you like that one. I've seen you use that a lot. I like the crying laughing emoji. That's one of my favorites. And then
we need to start expanding our emojis because I guess I'm getting too predictable with my emoji use.
You've seen the Bitcoin emoji movement to get a Bitcoin emoji officially entered.
Did you sign the thing?
I didn't sign the thing.
Let's go sign the thing.
I don't know if it'll help for me to sign it. I think it's,
why not?
I think it's a done deal. I feel like Bitcoin's mature enough and in the social consciousness enough to warrant an emoji at this point.
Without signature.
Without people's signatures.
It's above signature.
Yeah, I don't think it needs a petition. I mean, it's great that they did it. I just think
it has one.
It's foregone conclusion. There should be an emoji for it.
I'll sign it for both of us.
on this licensing question or this comment, I think all these are like great ideas, and then there's also just so much complexity wrapped up into it. And I don't want to get back into this conversation. I feel like we had a
nice convo with the Costellos the other day about it as well. So we're continuing to think this stuff through, and I think we'll get there. We'll come with something, you know, we got to start somewhere.
Yep. Yeah. I'm glad. I think a few people found that helpful, at least just getting the conversation started, I think is the most important thing, so that everyone is kind of at least aware of the issues, the concerns, and kind of how tangled up this business is.
Yeah, because it's fun out here in the Wild West, but at some point in time, you know, you gotta make sure you're protecting the rights of these artists. You can't just take advantage of that. That'd be rude.
Yeah, I agree.
Right? I like your shirt, by the way. It's pretty cool.
Thank you. I can finally wear some better t-shirts and things now that it's warming up. I don't have to be huddled up in parkas and things all the time.
Yeah, that's good. Cool. Well, what are we going to talk about today? So last episode we talked about licensing, as we just went through.
Yeah.
And now what?
Well,
we thought we were going to maybe have a guest this time, but it didn't pull through. So
yeah,
maybe next time. So now we're going to talk about something else.
Yeah. Well, we have a couple like housekeeping things. So the Bitcoin record competition has
just a few
days left. So if
for you, submission,
yeah, for submission. So if you want to enter a song, do it soon. If you know someone who might be interested in entering a song in the competition, get them on the site to do that soon.
Yeah, you have until March 31st, I believe. That's this coming Sunday.
Yeah. So the submissions will close at the end of March, and then we'll have about a month of continuing to tally up all the zaps to figure out who's in now, the top finalists.
I don't want to put you on the spot on the air, but that's what I'm going to do. There's 100 submissions. Is that just a coincidence, or did you accidentally limit this thing to 100?
No, no. It went to 100 yesterday.
Okay, so, cool. So we're at exactly 100. It's not.
We have exactly 100 entries.
Thought maybe I just found a bug.
Well, we'll see when the 101st one is entered, and then
let's get 101.
We can revisit.
That's cool.
That.
I mean, 100's pretty. That's pretty cool, though.
Yeah, and there are some
great songs.
There's
a bunch of great music in here.
Yeah, there are some great songs in there. So, yeah, enter your songs over the next couple of days if you got one, and then it'll be fun to see who you know gets up to the top.
Yeah, and speaking of the conference, I'm gonna keep dropping some little hints here, but we got some cool stuff coming up there. I think
it's gonna be fun. Nashville in July.
Yeah, might want to plan your trip to Nashville in July.
Yeah, we've got some fun stuff cooking. I'm excited. We'll be able to share more info once we figure out details.
Yeah,
but yeah. But the record alone is so exciting for me. Like to have that physical release coming out, I can't wait.
I think I get to help a little bit with the artwork. I'm excited about that too.
Yeah,
we're going to talk about that later today with them. So hopefully, I like that kind of stuff.
Yeah, I know you do. You're good at it.
I'm real artsy fartsy.
Let's shout out a couple other podcasts quick. That you were on the Progressive Bitcoiner podcast a couple weeks ago, I think it was.
Yeah, with Trey. Yeah, that was. That was fun. I like that podcast. I like podcasts that sort of talk about, other stuff. I don't know.
Different things. Yeah.
Yeah. Different thing. I mean, it's like, it's Bitcoin related, but it's just talking about more about, I guess, the people around Bitcoin, which I think is interesting. I like to hear people's stories and I like to hear, we can find ourselves in a bit of a bubble every once in a while. And so I like to, hear people's take that are outside of our little bubble that we're in so often. So
yeah,
that was a great show. I really enjoyed it.
Yeah, that was a good episode. So if you want to check out that, Sam talks about a lot of different things, not just Wavelake on that, that I think is worth a listen. And then Carr with Thriller had Ryan Zach on his podcast, I think just like yesterday or a couple days ago. That was a really interesting conversation. Ryan Zach has a bunch of classical music, I guess, for, I don't know if that's the accurate genre to put it under, but
the low, my favorite is the lo-fi classical volume 1 and 2, but yeah. He's got some new stuff on there too.
Really beautiful. Actually, I think, music. Yeah.
Yeah.
So, Carr and Ryan have, a really interesting conversation about Ryan's background, his creative process. It's actually very little about the conversation revolves around Bitcoin. It's so much more about creativity, inspiration, all of that. With a little bit of Bitcoin sprinkled in here and there.
Yeah, so shout out to Carr too, because I'm also very much enjoying that show always, because it's very, very similarly starting to branch out into more about just the people and, what's going on in the culture and stuff. So yeah, that's a great episode. All those episodes are great, and Carr's great. Yeah,
for sure. Before we get to today's topic, should we play a tune?
Yeah, do you want to play yours or mine?
I've got one queued up.
Okay.
This is a newer Wavelake artist. I don't know much about them.
Okay.
But this is a cool song. It's by Mac Jamie, and the song is Dubai.
The many, many, many times that I hate you. Used to go through my mind when I pray though. You got me spending on my dimes on my pesos. I'll even travel to Dubai if you say so. How many times will I do this? You're on my mind and I can't get enough. I am still young and I'm foolish. Losing myself, making haste for your love. Many, many times, going through my mind, going through my mind.
Super cool.
Pretty cool track.
Very
remember
cool.
if you like songs during this show, you can send them a little love in your lightning enabled player or via Wavelake. That's one of the cool things about this podcast and all the other music podcasts out there.
Yeah. I dig it. I like listening to this show. You can listen to it on Wavelake, but I like listening to it on Fountain.
Fountain's a great app.
I'm gonna give Fountain some little shout out on that. I like because I listen to it in my car, you know, like I'll listen back, and especially your show Mixtape, which if you don't listen to that, people should go listen to Michael's show in between these shows. He's got Mixtape. But I like listening to that one in my car, and you know, it's the auto boost is great for that. So
yeah.
Yeah. We gotta figure that out someday. Something like that.
An auto boost?
Something on the mobile app, like an autos app or like a budget or something. I don't know.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah, if people have ideas on that, I'd love to hear them. I think we've gone in a few circles thinking through the auto
zapping. Yeah, it's like, do you want to set a budget? UX. Like, I want to spend $10 a month on Wavelake, and that'll just get distributed.
Yeah.
However, you know,
I think it's, I think the tricky thing with it is, because it's not a well-known feature, like this is not something that's common on, you know, normal apps to like automatically send payments to things, unless it's a subscription, that there's, I think every person has a slightly different definition of what they would like that to how they would like that to work. And it's just a matter of figuring out like what is the easiest, most intuitive, like least intrusive way to automatically deduct.
Yeah, because you don't want to turn it on and have it be unlimited and then you fall asleep and now you've paid, you know, $20 while you're snoozing, or maybe you don't want to limit it because it would be annoying to have to keep activating it every hour or something, you know. But I think there's a way to do it. I don't know.
Yeah, definitely.
We'll just have to, or options. I think that would be cool too. There's like when you set like on Nostr Wallet Connect or something, you know, when you use that, there's the, how much do you want to,
what's your weekly budget?
This? And then, and then you can have the reckless mode where it's just unlimited, which I always do. Cause I'm a true renegade, you know, I'm a real bad boy. All right. So, yeah, great song. Let's dig into some stuff here. What do we got?
So the name of this topic in our notes is NFTs. So I should have given a trigger warning ahead of that.
Everyone's favorite topic, NFTs.
But it's more what I think is interesting about NFTs, and specifically how musicians are interested in NFTs, and I'm not saying all of them are, but you know, I don't
a lot of
think...
them were on the last cycle.
Oh, for sure.
I mean, everyone's so hungry to make money, and then you're hearing about like Snoop Dogg made $20 million with his NFT, and then you're like, how do I get in on that?
I don't think it's over. I don't think the NFT wave for music is over. I still see projects that pop up, small ones that pretty much are building on the same concept.
What was that thing? You sent me something the other day, and I was having a
hard time people are doing
figuring out what it was.
Yeah, people are doing music on Bitcoin on the main chain using ordinals and inscriptions. And I might be using I'm using those two terms interchangeably when I know they're not the same. So I'm open to being corrected on this. But yeah, people are inscribing small MP3 files, like 3 to 4 megabyte files, into blocks.
Yeah.
It's only happened a couple of times that I'm aware of, or more than a couple, but you know, a handful of times. The fees paid on those inscriptions are pretty hefty, as you could imagine, because they take up almost an entire block. But but it is interesting to see people experimenting with this idea of essentially creating a permanent record of an audio file, or any file for that matter, and writing that to the Bitcoin blockchain. Whether that's, you know, I mean, they're paying the fee to do it, so, you know.
Yeah, I mean, this is
say
a
what
real,
you will. Yeah, say what you
it's
want.
A real
about.
Hot topic. It's a real hot topic, but the reality of it is, if you can do it, you can do whatever you want. I mean.
Yeah, yeah, and so I don't think like it's interesting for us necessarily to discuss like whether inscriptions make sense or whether NFTs in on any blockchain make sense. But it is interesting to me how artists and musicians gravitate towards these technologies and these tools.
Yeah.
Because I heard a term the other week that I keep thinking about, financial nihilism. So it's this idea it's this idea that like so many people in our generation and in younger generations, they feel so far removed from any sort of sense of financial stability, any sense that they might, you know, do things like own a home one day or be able to retire comfortably. Like these things are so far out of reach that, you know, that it becomes kind of it makes some sense to say like, well, I'll just put some money on some altcoin and like if it moons then great.
It's like a it's like a, you know, buying a scratcher, like, you know, people that's pretty common, like lottery tickets and those types of things are pretty common in low income households, because it's like, what do you have to lose? It's $5, $10 and you might get something. It's the shit coin is like the new lottery ticket, I think,
for
a
sure.
lot of people.
Yeah, and I think NFTs, inscriptions, all of these, you know, quote unquote Web3 solutions for helping musicians earn.
I think we're up
more
to Web 7 now.
Is it? Okay, I lost count. but I think the motivation is exactly the same. It's like,
yeah.
What other alternative do I have as a musician to have any shot at making a living off of my artistic work, unless maybe I try one of these things, and if they moon, then, you know, it was worth it.
Right.
And if not, no big loss.
But that's the problem. I mean, that's the setback, and I think why people hesitate to try new things that aren't as risky, because they've been burned by, or have heard about other people being burned through these. I mean, I was just talking to someone the other day and she was like, you know how every few years everyone's like talking about Bitcoin and crypto or whatever, and then it just kind of goes away. I'm like, yeah, I know exactly what you're talking about. She's like, why does that happen? I'm like, well, how much time do you have? I can explain to you why that happens. But from the outside perspective, that's where she was coming from. Her position was just like, yeah, every few years someone comes along and says they're going to change the whole world. And then it just like nothing ever happens, you know? And it just plays into the same nihilism, I think, that everyone has just with our regular financial system. They're like, oh, this thing says it's going to come in and help. And then turns out it's just the same old scam as always, you know?
Yeah.
You know, I think things like this, Bitcoin is not scamming people. And I think that's probably one of the biggest concerns about ordinals, outside of the fact that it's, you know, clogging the network or whatever, is that I think people are just afraid people are going to get scammed, you know, but the ability to do tokens and do these, and also, you know, probably some sort of government oversight with tokens. If it's connected to money, then it's like, is it a security or something? I don't know. There's all types of arguments around these things, but I get where those people are coming from. But at the same time, like we said, it's like, if you have, I don't know, if we voted in through consensus the ability to do these things, then you know, what are you going to do? You can't stop it. That's the whole point.
Yeah. I mean, my feeling is that if these ordinals, inscriptions, NFTs actually are valuable, then they will continue to be paid for and they will be worth the fees to make more of them. And if they're not,
yeah,
then they won't be worth it.
And yeah, they'll just go away.
The problem solved
itself. It just won't work. Yeah, exactly.
I'm still, you know, I don't have that strong of an opinion about whether or not I do think NFTs in some shape or form have a valid use case that's out there. I don't know exactly if they look like what they do today. But they could be useful. I just don't know.
I mean, these are the only thing I liked about NFTs, and I'm even talking like shitcoin NFTs. I'm not a shitcoiner, but I liked that artists had a place to create stuff. There were some really cool looking things. I like art. I like graphic design. So from that angle, it was really hard for me to disapprove when it's like these artists are making cool stuff. They found a way to monetize their art in a digital space, like, which they've never been able to do before. And some people really made a lot of money. Unfortunately, on the other side of that, a lot of people who paid them that money got screwed. That's the like major, that's the huge problem with it. So I don't think the benefit for the art world outweighs the rug pulls on the opposite end of it, you know? So if there's a better version of that coming, that's cool, because it's just, we're here for artists, for musicians, but I also like designers and graphic designers and artists. And if they're able to reap some reward from this new incoming system, then that's really cool. I think it's just like, everyone's still just figuring this stuff out. It's weird to get too mad, you know, like at that last conference, those little wizard dudes went up on the stage and everyone was like, had a heart attack when they were talking about ordinals. And it's like, dude, just chill out. Like, these guys are goofy and they're trolling everybody. And this, and you know, you're feeding into this in a way that, everyone expects you to. And it's just so predictable, when in reality, I think it's like, you have trolls who just want to like stay on Twitter and argue about this stuff every day for the rest of their lives. But then you also have people that are just trying stuff out and want to see what can happen. And they're pushing the boundaries, and they're willing to spend thousands of dollars to get an MP3 on the blockchain for some strange reason. But they're just trying stuff out. I mean, that's how we got here, I guess, to begin with. And it may not all be great. But I don't really look at most of it as a threat. I think a lot of these things have to happen in order for, the innovation to continue. You have to kind of see what's a bad idea and what's a good idea.
Yeah.
It's like, oh, all that stuff was bad, so maybe there's just a better way to do it now.
Yeah. I mean, I see it as all a giant experiment, and a lot of them will fail, and some of them will have good ideas that we can build on. I just don't, it's just so hard to, I think, separate the two right now. We're just too close to it all. What is interesting is that it seems like everyday people's awareness of the dysfunction with the music industry, with major streaming platforms. It might be just me because we're very close to all this right now, but you know, if we talk about that new earning platform that James Blake released this past week or put out,
right?
He got a lot of pushback about that. Yeah, Vault.
He got a lot of attention and a lot of pushback. Yeah, which was good. It was good to see people. And this is the same thing. It's like you don't want to give James Blake shit for
trying
something like this.
Yeah,
it's like cut him some slack, man. He's just saying this sucks, and like this is just another way to make some money. And it's, I mean, it does. I mean, I look at this Vault. It's vault.fm. If you want to go check it out, you sign up, you give him an email address, or maybe a phone number or something. For those KYC nerds out there, watch out. And you know, you give the guy $5 and you can talk with him. There's a chat room and there's some unreleased music, and that's kind of it. It's incredibly simple. It's not anything new. It's like a,
it reminds me of BowieNet. Remember the very early version of BowieNet, which was basically the same thing.
Shout out to Wastoids. A few episodes ago, we did a whole thing on ClickVortex about early internet pioneers, and we talked about BowieNet and some of that cool stuff that was going on. But yeah, it's very, this is nothing new. This is like fan club level connection, you know, which is cool. And this is stuff we've talked about doing on Wavelake as a feature. It's fine. It's totally fine. It's not the solution to the problem, because Bobby Shell posted a thing on Twitter today, kind of highlighting the problem with this. It's like, yeah, what if, he read a couple of tweets that people had mentioned, and it's like, yeah, it sucks. What if you have more than a few artists that you like on Vault? It's like $5 a month for James Blake. Maybe someone else goes on there and it's 10, maybe a couple people go on there and it's a few bucks, but that
adds up.
I mean, on average, I think we've just in our own research on a, like a regular streaming platform, the average person listens to about 45 artists a month, somewhere around there. You know, so even if it was a small percentage of that, you can't pay that every month. You already have so many subscriptions. That's the problem with these paywalls. It's just tough. You know, it's too tough to do it. And this isn't new. It's like people are already doing this on Patreon. People are already doing this on other things like that. I'm sure there's other platforms with a similar model where you know, for the low price of $4.99, you get a deeper connection with your favorite artist, and that stuff's fine. And I'm sure it works for a certain percentage of the super fans, but it's not a solution for everybody.
Yeah.
But it's cool he's trying, and this is just further proof that like people are fed up, and it's, even if this isn't the long-term answer, it did get a lot of attention. It got a lot of people thinking about this stuff again, and I think that's great.
I think that's the interesting thing is, you know, Vault itself isn't incredibly unique, but the reaction, I think, is what's interesting. I think if it were, like, I don't know, I might be wrong here, but if this came out, I feel like 2-3 years ago, I think the reaction would have been overwhelmingly positive. Like, oh, this is it. This is how we help creators, right? But we've gone through, like, the recent cycle of these kinds of things has happened so close to now that people remember it. There's a memory that, oh yeah, we were promised this as a solution really recently, and it didn't work. And so to come out with something like this, like you said, I think it's great that he's trying something, but I think people are a bit wiser now than they were even just a few years ago.
Yeah. Plus, I don't, you know, the last episode we talked about how complicated and convoluted licensing deals are and publishing deals are and stuff, and we could talk about that for hours, or at least attempt to.
We'll do a spinoff podcast about publishing and licensing rights and the legal ramifications of it all.
James Blake is on a major label. I don't know which one. I'm sure he's on. It's, you know, there's only a few of them, so he's on one of them. I'm sure he has some kind of publishing deal, but not even everybody could do this, which is the thing, you know. This is cool for, it's like
if you're established.
It's like you have to be an established enough artist, and you also have to have a unique combination of deals to allow you to even release unreleased music. And you have to be big enough to be able to justify someone paying you anything monthly for it. So for the good portion of people who are actually able to, you know, people like the level of artists that are on Wavelake right now, they could do whatever they want because everyone owns their masters, and they don't have deal. Most of them don't have record deals or anything like that. But they're not going to be able to use this. You know, like who's going to be able, if I uploaded music to Vault right now, no one's going to pay $5 a month to listen to my crap, you know? I don't know, but I guess I do like that part of it though, that he is thinking a little bit outside the box, where in his situation, he is able to release a certain type of thing that outside of his universe. Maybe more people will start thinking like that. Like, oh, I am in a record deal, but I could release something under a different name, you know, maybe that's how I skirt around this and try some of these things out. So I don't know. I think it's all cool whether it works or doesn't work or whether it scales or doesn't scale. I'm just happy to see things happening, you know, because it was so stale for a while, and I feel like it's just starting to boil a little bit here.
It does. It does really feel like, did you see this week Spotify is going to get into the ed tech industry? They're going to start releasing like educational and instructional audio to, you know, expand their library, which I think
surprised. I'm not even going to say it. But this there's some straw grasping going on here.
Yes, I was going to say it is very much, it feels like a grasping for straws moment. And everyone watching is, I think, very aware of that. And I think
just losing core focus, you know. It's like, this isn't working. What's going to work? And it's like, now you're audiobooks, targeting education.
I mean, it was podcasts not too long ago, audiobooks not long after that. Now it's ed tech. I mean, they might start making an EV soon, for all we know. I don't know what they'll branch out to. Should we play another track now? Oh, did you have a thought?
I'm just going to say how depressing the state of the music industry is. It's like, it is depressing, but I'm hopeful. I am hopeful. But it's sad when, like, I mean, I use Spotify, you know, it's where everything is. I use Tidal. I use everything because as I've told you, I'm a psychopath. I just kind of subscribe to all of it because I don't even know why, because I'm a music guy and I just want to know how things are working.
This just reminds me of something because it happened to me this past week. Are there albums that you have, like albums you really love that don't exist on those platforms that you have to go to like a CD or some local hard drive to listen to?
There are records that I love that aren't on those platforms, but even that, I feel like that is becoming rarer, mostly because there's some cool record labels that are starting to pull this stuff out of obscurity and get these types of things on platforms. Like there's one called Omnivore, which they're really cool. They release a ton of records every year, but they're all stuff that would just be in like a graveyard somewhere, you know, like the vinyl bins, bottom shelf, and they're finding the cool stuff and bringing it back to life. So less and less of that. It's all starting to show up, but I do like, I mean, I use different platforms for different things. Like I just use Spotify just for listening to like my playlist that's like 700 hours long, you know, if I just am in the car. But if I want to actually, I don't know, they all have cool features, but I'm looking forward to implementing a lot of those things into Wavelake as time comes on. So I can just, yeah. I saw somebody yesterday posted on Nostr, like, where do you listen to music? And people were, I think Derek Ross said 95% Spotify, 5% Wavelake. I thought that was a win.
That's
5% on Wavelake. That's
pretty good.
That felt pretty good. I was like, dude, that's cool. And then I thought about it. I was like, what would my answer be? And it's a little bit more than 5%. I listen to Wavelake quite a bit, but, for new music discovery, it's like 90% for me at this point.
How it is for me too. I find a lot of new stuff on Wavelake.
Yeah. It's like, that's when I'm like actively looking for new music is now almost entirely on Wavelake, or someone's just, if it's not on Wavelake, it's like a friend telling me about something, you know? And then I add it to Spotify. Spotify is like my daily driver, you know, and then Wavelake is my really hot looking car in the garage that I go in to check out every once in a while. So,
I mean, 5% of someone's daily listening or average listening, if you compare the size of the libraries, Wavelake versus Spotify.
Yeah.
to dedicate 5% of your listening to Wavelake, that's, really impressed. That's great.
Yeah. We just crossed 600 artists, 600 and something now. And so, yeah, I mean, what is, you know, these other platforms have tens of thousands, if not, I mean, I don't even know, hundreds of thousands, maybe.
Who knows?
Probably, right?
I don't even, you probably can't even count. I mean, for anyone who's curious, Sam and I, like, we track the number of unique artists on Wavelake like insane people. Like, just
every day. Every single day.
Every day. It's like, new person. We have, like, if there's a new artist I've never heard of, like, I'm there. We're like very much, we're as enthusiastic about seeing new stuff pop up as
we're in tune.
Anyone else.
I get really pumped on the, did you used to do this? Like when you were a kid and you go to record stores, I'm sure you did, but like being a design nerd too, I would buy a lot of records just strictly on the artwork.
On the art?
And I'm getting really pumped on that, like just going to the new and just starting with the things that have the coolest looking art. That gets me real jazzed.
Yeah, I've got burned a few times that way too, like buying albums on the artwork alone. I remember being in Tokyo, like it was probably, I don't know, like 20 years ago now almost. And I didn't know any Japanese artists. I just walked into a record store and was like, I'm just going to look for stuff that, you know, where the artwork looks cool. I had a pretty low success rate with that experiment. but that was, I don't know, for music lovers, that's like the price you're willing to pay to find cool new shit. Is absolutely. Like, you're willing to suffer through so much bad music, fork over all this money, and if you get like a hit rate of like 3%, it's still worth it.
Well, the cool thing, I mean, did you have like a record exchange growing up?
Oh, like a used CD store kind of thing?
Yeah, because that's what I would do. And that's why it was like a little bit less of a gamble. It's like you'd buy a used CD, it would be, you know,
$2.
$9. Yeah. Nine. If it was new, it'd be like $8 or $9. If it was like a newer title, if it was like some new pop punk record, but someone had put it out, you know, already traded it in.
Right.
If it was something old, it's like 99 cent bin or something.
This was why I originally got into vinyl in the 90s was, it was so cheap. Like no one cared about vinyl in the mid to late 90s. And so I would go to this place that wasn't too far from my house called Hip Cat Records. And it was, the guy was always playing live concert albums. So it would be like The Who, Live at Leeds. It was always like, or it was like bootleg live albums. But you could go in there, and I still have these records from those days. You could get like kind of a beat up copy of Sgt. Pepper for like $2.
Right.
And it wasn't like, you know, I mean, now we know about all the you know, different pressings and which ones are valuable and not. But back then, I didn't care. I had never heard Sgt. Pepper before. I had heard of it. That was where I first found and listened to, like, bands like the Velvet Underground. I mean, I didn't grow up in a household where, like, rock
you're
and
just like, this banana looks cool.
Totally. Well, but the thing was, I read music magazines, so I'd kind of heard of these bands, but I'd never had access to them. And so I could take, like, 10, 20 bucks to the used record store and get, like, 7 albums, if I was lucky, and yeah. take them home. And it was like, I mean, the first time I heard Velvet Underground and Nico, I was like, this is weird. I don't understand this. Now, of course, I love it. But, yeah, I mean, that was, I mean, Pink Floyd, all that classic rock stuff was so easy to find and cheap because everyone was just like, I don't use these anymore. I'll just get rid of it. And it was it was great for me.
But that was the cool thing about the exchange is if you weren't going to keep it, if you got a clunker, you just sell it back. It's like, so what? You bought it for $5 or $6. You sell it back for $3. And it's like, all right, I cut my losses. I lost $3. It was worth a shot. But it was fun.
Come out with a stack of stack.
And sometimes you would know immediately. Like, I'd get in the car and I'd just be like, oh, no. I screwed up so bad.
Yeah.
I screwed up so bad.
The library there were a few records like that too. Did you ever go to the library and borrow?
Oh man, CDs I love the library because for some reason I couldn't find solo Beatles CDs in record stores. I don't know why. Like
what
I just
do you
had
mean
a hard
by solo?
Time. Like the solo Beatles stuff. Like
Lennon.
Know, solo Paul McCartney albums and solo Lennon albums. And there were so many of them. I mean, there's 4 Beatles, and so I didn't have any money, and I couldn't get my parents to buy me all these like solo records.
Yeah.
So I use the library almost exclusively to find my favorite Beatles solo CDs, and then I would go buy them.
Yeah.
You know? So like I discovered Paul McCartney's Ram, which is my favorite Paul album. I still remember it. It was the gold disc version, and I just was like obsessed with. I was freaking out. I was like, "How this is so good! Like this is like another Beatles album. This is crazy." And then there were so many terrible ones too, you know, like especially as you get a little bit down the path. But I've grown to love those records too. But like, yeah, when you're, you know, 12 or 13 and you're listening to Paul McCartney's 1993 album Off the Wall or whatever. No, that's not what it was. What was that album? I don't remember. That was a Michael Jackson album, wasn't it?
Off the Wall was Michael Jackson. Yeah. Yeah. Oh, yeah. The one with the McCartney Michael Jackson duet. The doggone girl is mine.
Yes, that's such a great video too. I see that video all the time on Vivo. It's so cheesy. I know. Doggone girl. That video. I think they're like on a hay wagon.
That sounds about right. Like I can picture it.
Yeah.
No, those Eureka record moments. Like my one that I distinctly remember from a library rental. I found, like, I'd never heard listen to Bob Dylan before, and I found like a copy of Highway 61 Revisited at the library. And I'm like, well, this is cool. It was in the Laserdisc section, and I like found it. I'm like, what is this? And I took it up to the counter, and it had no like code on it. Like she couldn't scan it in, so she had to like do something
manual
on the computer.
She's just like, this is yours now.
I wish I had kept it. I guess I was too honest. I brought it back eventually, but I distinctly remember putting the record on my dad's record player, and that like drum hit on the first song comes on, and it just blew my mind. It completely floored me when I heard it.
See, my dad's favorite artist of all time is Bob Dylan, so I had too much exposure to Bob Dylan as a kid.
See, I feel like and my kids
as a result,
are suffering
that
now.
Yeah, I was sick of Bob Dylan, and my friends, a couple of my friends discovered and got incredibly obsessed with Bob Dylan in their like mid to late 20s, and they'd be like, dude, and I'm like, get away from, I don't,
you're
I'm
not,
done.
Yeah.
I don't, I've already been through, I've already been down this road. I've heard every single Bob Dylan thing that ever existed. I don't need to hear it. I know already, trust me.
Yeah, that's hilarious.
Well, I will say, I think Planet Waves is that the Dylan
that's
record
Dylan.
With the, I love that album. That's great. That's what I mean. I love all this. I love all of his stuff with the band. But that one in particular is a cool record.
Yeah.
It's got like a Night Like This, I think, is on that album. I really like that song. All right. So I'm going to play a song now.
Let's do
it. Is that cool? All right. I'm going to play a little Bob Dylan for you. This one. No, this is a song called I Love Everything by Shy Kids. It is Shy Kids. I Love Everything.
Great song.
It's a great song.
Shy Kids.
I love everything about that song.
They've got a lot of other great songs too. I'm happy to see they put up an older full length not too long ago. That's pretty cool.
Yeah, they have a good a big range of styles. I like it. Some good stuff. Really good stuff.
Very cool. Well, I think that does it for today.
Does that do it? Are we done? Are we done with this?
So.
This old guy? All right, cool.
Yeah. Well,
thanks for listening, and you know, we got this viewer mail segment now that really has to be filled out, cuz we have a theme song and everything thanks to Tone Wrecker.
Yeah.
So
we need to be able to play.
Let's not let Tone Wrecker down. We gotta
we
gotta keep this thing going. So drop some incredibly insightful comments in our Fountain or Wave Lake, and we'll read them on the air. We'll shout you out, and we appreciate you listening. And I like doing this show. It's fun.
Yeah, I do too.
We're only six in. We'll see. I mean, you know.
Yeah, once we get to 10, you know, we can.
Once it gets to 10, it might be a different story, but right now I'm digging it.
Yeah.
And next time I'll remember to record it as well.
Yeah, that'd be good. I'm happy to just talk into microphones into the ether too.
Yeah, we did discover too that like there were some other technical things probably that we hopefully, let's just say, hopefully everything works out. Hopefully this episode yeah. actually can be uploaded somewhere.
If someone hears this part of the podcast, yeah, we made it. Thanks for coming along on this adventure with us.
You've been listening to Waveform, brought to you by WaveLake. WaveLake is a platform for artists to share their music beyond paywalls and where fans can pay whatever they want using Bitcoin. Artists retain all the rights to their work and receive payments instantly via the Lightning Network. Find out more at wavelake.com. Waveform is produced by Sam Means and Michael Ree. Theme by Paul Birkin. I'm D++. Thanks for listening.